shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt. Well, what a week it's been. We've been describing this whole Brexit nonsense as a pantomime, a tragicomedy, a farce. Well, it got even more farcical this week. Somehow it's all in the courts and Sir John Major is back. It's a pity he didn't show the dynamism and the passion when he was the Prime Minister, as he is now when he's trying to stitch up Boris Johnson. Big question over whether Boris is a clown, a panto dame, or is actually going to be the hero of the piece. And then, of course, it got farcical on Wednesday in Strasbourg, in the European Parliament, where everybody was calling everybody else, or referring to them as film titles, led by Darth Vader. Well, let's get the lowdown on all this, because one of the main men who was in that European Parliament in Strasbourg was the Welsh MEP, Brexit Party member, Nathan Gill, who joins me now.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Nathan.
Good afternoon.
My goodness me. What was all that about? Who started off all the film bit? Give us the lowdown on what happened yesterday.
Well, it's all kind of high drama, but I'm not even sure if it is that. It's bonkers, quite frankly. You go into this huge, absolutely massive chamber, a place where you could literally take a phone call at the top of your voice and you wouldn't disturb people a few yards away. It's just absorbs sound and atmosphere. And quite frankly, the most important debate of this session, and without a doubt, the most important debate of this year, and it was practically empty. If you look at the photos and the videos and the footage of the actual debate, where were everyone? The 29 Brexiteers from the Brexit Party were there. And of course, we're all in good voice and high spirits. But as soon as the Remainers started, which they got the lion's share of all of the time, it was just horrendous to have to listen to sit there and listen to them deriding our country, deriding our prime minister, whether you agree with him or not. He is still our prime minister. And basically just criticizing the British people. And one of the points that I made afterwards to a colleague was, I mean, ultimately, why is it that the MEPs think that they get a vote on something that the British public had a vote on and we've been denied for 3 years, yet these upstart MEPs think that they can come into this chamber and vote on our Brexit, on what we wanted, and that they can demand what we get. It's unbelievable.
What was the title of the debate? What was the debate meant to achieve yesterday?
Well, it was a debate on Brexit, on Guy Verhofstadt put forward a resolution. And in that, basically, his Brexit steering group, they've met for 3 years and they're very important, of course. And at the end of it, they've got this resolution, but it's non-binding. We're voting on things that don't have to happen, and it's up to the Commission whether they accept it or not, because don't forget, it is a very, very thin veneer of democracy that we have here in the European Parliament. And he said things like, if we leave with no deal, it's completely and utterly the fault of the British. If we leave with no deal, the British must still pay their financial obligations, all this kind of nonsense.
He also started insulting you. Didn't he call you Brexit sceptics rather than sceptics? Isn't that when it began to kick off? Why does he have to be so personally insulting? And, of course, he made an appearance at the Bollocks to Brexit Lib Dem conference, didn't he, last weekend?
I'll say one thing about Guy Verhofstadt. He's a player and he knows his audience and he knows how to get them going. And I think he's playing to the gallery. Not that there were very many people in the galleries, a bunch of poor school students who'd been dragged to Strasbourg as part of a school trip. But he plays to the gallery.
Well, it's interesting you talk about playing to the gallery, because some would argue that's what Nigel did yesterday. And the Daily Telegraph has written what I think is a supportive piece about what you all got up to yesterday.
Yes, I read that.
Because they were basically saying, hopefully, if you all keep performing like you performed yesterday, people like Martin Daubney and Nigel and yourself, then what will happen is the EU other countries must just be getting fed up of it and they might let us go. What do you think?
But do remember that before we had the European elections, Nigel Farage stood there and said to them, if you don't let us leave, if we have to go to a European election, we will come back. We will come back in huge numbers and you will regret it. And that's what we're doing. We are there in huge numbers. We are letting them know when they talk their rubbish, when they talk their nonsense, we let them know on behalf of the Brexiteers and the British majority that we're just not going to sit there and let them do it. And that's what we're doing. And I'm telling you now, John, when we are gone, when we do leave, which because we are, when we do leave, that place is going to be very, very boring.
I noticed also Lance Foreman, he made his first, his inaugural speech in the Parliament, and I love the way he put it on Twitter. He said, my first and hopefully my last. Do you think we're going to get out soon?
Oh, goodness me. I wish I knew, because if I did, I could pay off my mortgage. I'd put money on it and pay off my mortgage. I don't know. I literally fluctuate from day to day as to what I think is going to happen and when it's going to happen and the timing. I can tell you this, and I do believe this without a doubt. Britain is going to leave the European Union. I have no doubts about that, because I would not be wasting my time, John, if I didn't believe that. But when and how and what the mechanism is going to be, that I'm really not sure, because there are so many variables in this. There are so many, if this happens, then that happens, you know, and then that stops that from happening. So are we leaving on the 31st? Well, OK, let me just put it this way. In the run-up to the 29th, when we were supposed to be leaving on the 29th of March, the European Parliament put on dozens of workshops for the MEPs, the British MEPs, who were going to be leaving early in their mandate to tell us legally what we had to do, the forms we had to fill out, our responsibility to our staff, all of that kind of stuff. So we were ready for the 29th. We haven't had a single seminar or briefing or form to fill out for us leaving on the 31st. I don't think they think we're leaving in this place. And if you listen very carefully to Michel Barnier and Herr Juncker yesterday, they were no longer attacking Boris. They were no longer talking about second referendums or anything like that. The whole language had changed, and it was as if they were preparing us for this terrible WA4. Theresa May's, well, it's not even her deal, was it? It came from Brussels. It was sanctioned by Frau Merkel and basically handed to May and told to go and get the British Parliament to vote for it. The worst deal in history. And they are determined they're going to get it through, because that's a victory for them.
OK, well, let's talk through it then as we speculate what's going to happen. Let's start first with Boris Johnson. I want to come on to that Theresa May deal with lipstick, as they call it. But let's start with Boris. How's he doing? And do you think in the end he is going to sell us out?
I think Boris is, look, he is under incredible pressure. He's been attacked from all sides. I mean, the jumped up pipsqueak of a prime minister from Luxembourg, and nobody knew who he was before yesterday, and quite frankly, everybody's forgotten who he is today. Even he's attacking Boris Johnson. I mean, everybody's just pulling everybody out of the way so they can get there first to land a punch. So he's been very resilient. I think he's saying a lot of things that Brexiteers do want to hear, and he's certainly playing to the Conservative Party gallery. But, and there's a big but here, can he actually do it? Has he got something up his sleeve? And quite frankly, I don't think he does. I hope he does. I hope he gets us out with no deal on the 31st, but I just don't think he has.
OK, let's go back to that Luxembourg humiliation. Was Boris right not to do the press conference? And was that a deliberate stitch-up? And did the EU, if it was deliberate, did they overplay their hand there? Because it hasn't played very well with the British public, has it? Most people are still massively behind Boris.
It never plays well with the British public, because we always, always go for the underdog. We do not like these stitch-ups. We see it a mile off. Of course it was a stitch-up. Look, even the BBC, of all people, said, we cannot have this press conference here. It's ridiculous. There were loudspeakers. There was, that huge mob of baying Romaniacs shouting down. How can you hold a press conference when you're trying to shout above a mob who are trying to shout above you? It's just a farce. It's a nonsense. And even the BBC said, we can't do this. This is crazy. Let's go inside. Oh, we've only got a broom cupboard. It's not big enough for everyone. Well, don't forget, Baker was there just beforehand.
Yeah, yeah,
they had
yeah.
a room big enough for him, didn't they? So, of course, it was a stitch-up. Yes, it's backfired on them with the people that matter, the British people. The Europhiles might be thinking, yeah, Boris got what he deserved. He was running scared. No, he wasn't. We would never, ever do that to a leader of any nation of the world. The British would never do that.
But what about this pipsqueak when he no-platformed him, so to speak, kept talking to the podium? That was the bit where it was, hold on a minute, I mean, I don't want to bring up the war too many times, but if it wasn't for us, Luxembourg would never have been liberated, as most of continental Europe. It was a massive insult, not just to Boris Johnson, not just to the 17.4, but to the whole of Britain, wasn't it?
To my grandfather, who got into Wellington's, to my great-grandfather, who got into Mark IV tanks and had to battle against the carbon monoxide poisoning of the engine. Yeah, it was an insult to all of us, quite frankly. And that is no way for a prime minister or for a serious country to treat another prime minister.
Now, you say he's under tremendous pressure, and of course, yesterday there was a Labour supporter whose child's been, you know, seriously ill. He had a massive go at Boris in the hospital. I noticed even the BBC political editor said, hold on a minute, he's an activist. Is the tide turning more in favour of Boris? Because this guy was even mic'd up. To my mind, I feel so sorry for him if his child's been ill. I'm a dad, you're a dad, we don't want that, but
no.
It's not right to do what he did, is it?
Let's use another war metaphor. It was a bridge too far. I think they went too far with it now. And I think people are just now starting to just roll their eyes at all of these set pieces and these staged anger and this doorstepping of politicians and of anybody, quite frankly. It's got to stop. We've got to get back to actually deep thinking politics and people who actually have something to say instead of just trying to capture the moment and shame people. I mean, to be honest with you, what has it got to do with Boris Johnson? I mean, it's terrible that this man's child is extremely ill, but Boris Johnson has been Prime Minister for how long?
Absolutely.
What has it got to do with Boris Johnson? So, yes, he now has to get it sorted out, and we all want the NHS sorted out, for heaven's sakes, but this stage management of Labour activists, they always get caught out. I mean, you see it on Question Time all the time, don't you?
So, talking about people and getting back to deeper politics, what do you make of David Cameron's intervention with this book?
I think he's trying to sell copies of his book, quite frankly. I mean,
I'm waiting for it to come out in paperback because the page sizes would be much more convenient in the smallest room in the house. But seriously, you know, it's unbelievable what he's done, isn't it? As a former Prime Minister.
Yeah, I mean, there is a kind, or was a kind of convention that once you've done your stint, you get out the limelight and you leave the others to it. I mean, even Maggie did that. But I think obviously the timing was to coincide with his book. I mean, we see it as well with John Major and unfortunately with Tony Blair. But every time he pops his head up, our cause just goes up higher and higher because he just reminds people of everything that they hate about politicians and about the EU. These people have just got to get out of the way and leave it for the next generation. They're yesterday's men.
Okay, let's just talk about that court case quickly. In the second half of the show, we're going to go more on to where the Brexit Party plays in this and whether Boris is going to pull this off. But just before we finish the first half of Shooting from the Lip with Nathan Gill, talk to me about this court case. I mean, I've tried to watch it on Sky, but I basically lose the will to live. What's going on and how do you think that's going to shake down? Or is that impossible to say?
Well, no, I actually think, personally, I think that they're going to rule in favour of the government. It's going to be a close call, but and it probably was sailing close to the wind for the government with the prorogation. But ultimately, you know, governments have a right to prorogue, and it happens on a very regular basis. And it was hilarious in the European Parliament yesterday. They were saying about how we used to look up to Westminster. You were the mother of all parliaments. And now you've been shut down, you've been prorogued, and we're the place where everybody has their say and all the rest of it. But we counted how many speakers spoke for Brexit, how many spoke against. There were 63 speaking against Brexit, and there were 16, I think it was, 18 speaking for.
So who decides who can speak, Nathan? Do they have a kind of speaker? Who decides? Do they have a Burko figure? Explain that to us.
Yes, they do. So they have I mean, of course, everybody in this place is a president. So they have lots and lots of presidents and vice presidents. I think we have 7 presidents and 14 vice presidents. And the vice presidents, or the president, sits in the chair and they go through and they decide how long you get. So they gave an extra 440 something seconds, because we were counting, we were adding it all up, an extra 400 odd seconds to the Europhiles, and to the Brexiteers, we got an extra 100 and something seconds. So it is highly unfair what goes on there. And as I said, I called out to them, you know, you're proroguing us, you're stopping us from speaking, this so-called parliament.
Very good indeed. Nathan Gill, Shooting from the Lip, here on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. More in a moment. I want to get his views on John Bercow, his views on this 14-day deadline we've been given today by Finland. Yes, Finland. That's all coming up on Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, my special guest, Nathan Gill. Don't dare go away.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
Here we are then with the second half of Shooting from the Lip with my special guest today, Nathan Gill. Nathan, you were just talking about it being unfair, the debate in Strasbourg yesterday, and you were talking about these presidents who decide who can speak and not. What do you make of Bercow's activity in the mother of all parliaments over the past, 3 years, effectively?
Shameful. I think actually from when he first started, it's just been shameful. And if you remember, Nigel actually stood against Bercow, which was against precedent. And his mantra then was, you know, Buckingham needs a voice, not a speaker, which I thought was a very good catchphrase that we used at the time. As I was saying a little bit earlier about the professionalism of politicians and about actually honouring the positions that they have, this is what we expect in the mother of all parliaments from our speaker, that they are actually neutral, that they are blindfolded and almost hold that scales of justice and mercy, you know, and allow everybody their say. But of course, he's an absolute rabid Remainer, and he has used his office disgracefully in order to pursue the way that parliament has try to use legality and the system to stop our Brexit.
Now, we're being told Boris Johnson's been instructed by Finland, of all countries, because they hold the presidency at the moment. He's got 14 days to give a written proposal. They've shortened the time frame. Is he going to do that? Will it manage it? And what do you make of that?
Well, I mean, again, to quote from Nigel, who are you? I've never heard of you. Did you know that Finland was had the presidency of the EU? I mean, I was just saying about all the other bonkers presidents that we've got. Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, aren't they? They all want their moments in the sun. It was very famously, we were told that everybody gets 15 minutes of fame. Well, Finland's going to have about 20 seconds of it here. 14 days, who cares what they say? I mean, Boris should just actually get on with what he believes to be right and best for the Brexiteers and for Britain and for our future. And why are we allowing these people to dictate to us what we are doing with leaving the EU? Because quite frankly, Article 50 is very clear, and Article 50 says on it there should only be one extension. They have broken their own laws and rules. How many extensions have we had now?
Yeah, exactly. Will they give him another extension? I mean, he doesn't want the extension. He's meant to go there on hands and knees and give this letter that Bercow or whoever's written, Corbyn probably, and beg for another extension. He says he won't do that, but they're not going to give us one, are they? But the mood at the moment, I don't know. What do you think?
They're playing hardball. The French president's trying to win a few more votes by sounding tough to the old enemy, the English. But quite frankly, are you telling me that if Boris did have to say, give me an extension, and by the way, whatever you say, I will accept, that they're not going to say, okay, a year, because you're going to be paying us 1 billion extra euros a month. Yeah, we're heading into recession. We've got all of these bills to pay. Yeah, let the idiot British pay for it. Of course they'll extend. They will.
But whatever deal he gets whether it's, you know, Brian Owen, Brexit in name only, whether he manages to sort out the Irish backstop, which you and I probably agree with is a confected row. Whatever he does, he's still going to get it through Parliament. Is that going to happen with the attitude of Corbyn and the attitude of the Lib Dems and indeed some of his own rebels? So even if he brings something back, are they going to still try and stop it?
That's a really good question, because actually, for a long time, I've been very, very worried that this WA4 will go through, because ultimately it's keeping us in the EU. But I think that now Labour and the Lib Dems, they're smelling blood. They think that they can actually stop Brexit, that they can revoke Article 50. I mean, the Lib Dems are going straight for that. Forget about a second referendum. They're going straight for revoking Article 50. So I now feel they will vote down.
Yeah, so what did you make of her kind of conference speech, Jo Swinson? I thought she was like a bonkers head girl, really, at the end of the school year. But she's got no chance of getting elected. But she's made it clear now, if she was elected, they would basically not even allow the British public a second referendum. That would be it. The end of Brexit. Where's the democratic bit in their title disappeared to?
Well, the Liberal group here in the European Parliament renamed themselves Renew. And I think they've realised that they're no longer Liberal. They've stopped calling themselves it. And really, the Liberal Democrats need to rename themselves, because they're not Liberal and they're definitely not Democratic, are they? They are the Liberal Undemocratics. She's almost got into that. She's believing all of her own press. And do you remember when they were told, go home and prepare for government? Well, I think it's one of those moments, because these polls go up and down, and you can be high one day and think you're going to win an election or come second, and then events, dear boys, events, and suddenly you're down there way low. So let's wait and see what happens. But I don't think there's any chance of a Liberal government. I don't think that there's actually going to be an electoral pact between Labour and the Liberals. You might see a few little seats that the Liberals, maybe Plaid Cymru, and maybe the Greens have a couple of pacts with, but that will be it. It's, when it comes to the war of a general election, it's going to be every man for themselves.
Let's go on to a pact maybe between Brexit and Johnson in a moment. Just before that, what about Corbyn's position? He must have so many splinters in his backside sitting on that fence. The latest thing, yes, they'd campaign for another referendum, but he wouldn't tell people which way he's going to vote, and he would just do the will of the people. What do you make of that?
I think that the way that our system works is that we need a strong opposition, because the stronger the opposition, the stronger the government. We have an extreme, at one of the most important junctions in our nation's history, we have one of the weakest opposition leaders we've ever had. And it's shameful and very, very sad that the great Labour Party, this wonderful movement that has been the force of good in our nation, has allowed that to happen at this time. And quite frankly, they need to get their house in order. Corbyn is a disgrace. He is, let's face it, a Brexiteer. He just doesn't have the guts to stand up for it and actually say it. And if he did, the 5 million Labour voters who voted for Brexit would rally around him. But instead, as you say, he's sitting on the fence, and they're now third in the polls. And they deserve everything they get.
OK, let's talk about this pact that Nigel Farage wanted with Boris Johnson. Boris has rejected it. I mean, is this just all... I mean, I know a lot about this because I've been involved in it at various stages of the last 10 years. Is this just typical Brexiteers fighting like cats in a sack? You know what I mean? You know, Nigel doesn't like Dominic Cummings, Cummings doesn't like him, and all that starting off again. And that other guy, Matthew, his name escapes it, Matthew Elliott. Is that what it is again? Is that what's happening? And why on earth can't you bang your heads together? Because it would be unstoppable. I think even an independent would say that. If the Brexit Party and the what's left of the Conservative Party joined together, you'd have a landslide election victory.
We would. And I think it's all going to come down to the numbers in the end. And I think the hard, cold fact of looking at those numbers will decide whether or not the Conservatives do a pact with the Brexit Party. You know it, I know it, and I'm telling you now, Conservative activists and Conservative PPCs know it, that it would be madness for us not to have a pact.
So you think it is going to happen?
Well, okay. That's what I hope, and that's what everybody believes should happen and thinks should happen. But the Conservatives are very proud. They're very foolish. They do ridiculous things. And maybe they will just think that it is that bridge too far for them to actually have a pact. So I can't guarantee it. It's what really should happen. Whether it does or not remains to be seen.
But the facts are, it's inevitable there's going to be a general election, because going back to what I said a few moments ago, he's still got to get this through Parliament. He's not going to get it through Parliament, whatever he brings back, because of the mood of this Parliament. This Parliament is dead. This Parliament is deceased. This is a Monty Python sketch. It's a zombie. So let's just get rid of it, drain the swamp a bit, and come back. Do you think there will be an election in the next few months?
If I gambled, which I don't, but I would have put money on an October one. A long time ago. Is there going to be a November election? I just don't think there is, for a few reasons. One, the night, you know, gets dark at 4 o'clock. Who's going to go out campaigning, knocking on doors? And is there going to be a January one after Christmas, you know, when the campaign would be over Christmas? Absolutely not. You're then into February, very cold. March, you're in spring then. You may as well just wait until May when you've got the local elections and do it all in May.
And also, of course, Boris is doing very, very well in the polls. Corbyn can't even beat him at the moment. Can't even get anywhere near. I think he was, in terms of who'd make the best prime minister, Corbyn came fourth after don't know. Now, but so why isn't the Brexit party capitalising it? You're down at 14% now. If Boris doesn't get a deal by the end of October, do you think your polls will soar? And then even if they do, how do you turn that into power, if you understand what I mean?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You're right. As we go past the 31st and not leaving, watch those opinion polls go up and up and up, because they're going to, because the people are giving Boris the benefit of the doubt. He's talking a good talk. He's going to die in a ditch and all the rest of it. So it's more hope than reality is why people are still polling for the Conservative Party. How do we capitalise on it? How do we get power? Well, we're realists. We're not stupid. We know we're not going to win a general election because our system is the most undemocratic system in the world. It's unbelievable. First past the post, you know. So as we saw with UKIP days, 4 million votes and one MP. That's why we really believe that we do need one of these electoral pacts, so that we can be the balance of power and we can be the backbone for the Conservative Party and assist them and help them in delivering a proper clean break Brexit.
Do you think there could be, you said we're not the Yellow Jackets, just before we finish, do you think there could be trouble? I mean, we know the government are planning for it, that it could happen and how to respond to it. Do you think there could be, do you think people are angry, or do you think now people are just completely and utterly peed off with Brexit and they'll take any deal that Boris brings back?
Well, okay. Before the Brexit Party came along, I think we were heading for blood on the streets. We definitely were. You could feel the anger and the frustration everywhere you went and whoever you talked to. We were that, you know, the valve, safety valve on the pressure cooker. We allowed all that pressure to go, but it's now slowly building up again. So will we go back to that situation? I don't know. I don't think it's unreasonable, quite frankly. I do think that what is going to happen, though, is that there will be elements that will, you know, protest and get violent, because there are always a minority. But as I say, on the whole, the British people are going to wait for a general election, and that's when we're going to vent. That's when we're going to let rip.
And just finally, in a word, are we going to get out ever?
Yes.
Good. It is a word. Nathan Gill, thank you for taking the time to join us today. That was Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International with my guest, Nathan Gill, the MEP for Wales, and of course, a Brexit Party MEP. I'll be back with another great guest next week. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to John Gaunt, Sputnik International, Shooting from the Lip.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.